You've tuned in to Hub Talk, a podcast about teaching, learning, and technology.
Welcome back to this episode of Hub Talk. I'm Colin Stapp.
And I'm Bill Hamlin.
And today we are recording, I think, one of our most important Hub Talk episodes because we are talking with Schmeckeda's counseling services faculty. And we are going to be finding out from them some of the services that they provide to our students. A lot of students have been struggling with mental health, feelings of isolation, and we just wanted to be able to talk to the counselors today to get a little insight for what all of us as faculty at Schmeckeda can do to support our students and provide the resources so that our students can get free counseling services. So welcome. Thank you all for joining us. We have a big group. And so I'd like to just open it up and have all of you introduce yourself. Just say your name, maybe how long you've been at the college, and anything else that you might want to add.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Gardner, and I've been at the college about 27 years. I'm a graduate from Western Oregon University, and my major was rehab counseling deafness, so I am proficient in ASL.
I'm Karen Stevens, and I have been at the college since 1996. I don't know how many years that is. My degree is from Portland State University. I have a master's in clinical social work.
My name is Cleo Alvarez, and I've been at the college for 30 years, and I graduated from Western Oregon University.
Hi, and I'm Blanca Aguirre, and I'm a counselor here at the college as well. I've been at Schmeckeda for about 13 years. I have a master's degree in counseling from Oregon State University.
My name is Eusebio Herrera Perez, and I have been at the college for 4 years, almost five. I got a master's degree in social work from Portland State University.
My name is Chris Potts, and I serve as the Associate Dean for Counseling and Career Services. I've just been at the college for about almost 3 years now. My background area is higher education administration, and so I've been an administrator at a number of colleges and universities for about 15 years now. I've loved my time at Schmeckeda. I'm also currently a PhD candidate at Oregon State University, so trying to get done here sooner than later. I would also like to add that our counselors, along with the variety of their different counseling backgrounds and the institutions that they've attended, our counselors also offer our students the opportunity to meet in a variety of languages as well. So some of our counselors are bilingual, English, Spanish. We have a counselor that is also trilingual. Her third language is Spanish and Tagalog. We also have a counselor that knows ASL, so that's American Sign Language. So I think that's really important to see not only that are the various counseling backgrounds that the counselors have, but then also the broad diversity that they offer and how they can help our students or meet our students where they're at to support them through their journeys.
Yeah, that's really great to be able to meet students exactly where they're at and provide that diversity as well. Thanks for sharing that. Could one of you just tell us a little bit about what all counselors do?
I can answer that. This is Karen. And one of the things I love is we have a lot of variety in what we do. We provide mental health counseling, which is things like grief, depression, anxiety, trauma, those kinds of things. We do career counseling, which is assisting students with making a decision about their career path. We do crisis counseling. So if a student has a crisis that happens, we can get them to the resources they need to stay in school. We teach classes and workshops on career development, and lots of times we have mental health workshops. We're available to do classroom visits. I did one last night on anxiety for the STEM scholars. We'll do faculty consultations. So if you have a student in your class who needs some help and you want to get some advice and help them yourself, we can help you with that. Or if you want some advice about or to consult about how to refer and get that person on to us or to another resource, we can also provide those kinds of consultations to faculty. And then we, of course, like all faculty, serve on committees college-wide, academic standards, curriculum, president's advisory committee, all of those have a counselor that represent us. So I think that's mostly what we do.
Well, that's a wide range of services for a community college, which I think is so important.
Yeah, that is a wide variety of services indeed. And Chemeketa being, you know, one of the larger community colleges here in Oregon and having multiple outreach campuses, and especially now with the addition of more online and remote classes, I'm just wondering if one of you could share kind of an overview of those services in terms of where and when and how they are accessible to students and faculty.
Well, sure. This is Tiffany. Our main location is in Salem. We're in Building 2, located in Building 2. And our hours are Monday through Friday. Monday through Thursday, we're open until 7 p.m. And Friday, we close at 5 p.m. So we do work by appointment. We have students make their own appointments, or faculty will help them make appointments. And we also have something that's called on-call services, which I think is pretty unique to what we do at Chemeketa. So the on-call counselor does not schedule appointments for the day. They're strictly prepared to take any type of crisis or emergency situation that comes up. I think that's a pretty special service and a very needed service that our college community needs. Given with COVID, we are meeting remote, and we do have face-to-face services, and we also do emailing. So just emailing counseling@chemeketa.edu. Of course, there's times when we're not available because we work Monday through Friday. So there are resources available 24/7. There's crisis centers. So if you are working with a student and it's outside of our normal working hours, you can always look up Marion County Mental Health or Yamhill County Mental Health. So although instructors cannot and should not serve as health professionals, instructors can learn many of the common mental health challenges related to stress and anxiety. And I think one of the main things instructors can do is provide hope to a student who might feel hopeless at the time. Instructors who familiarize themselves and are aware of mental health challenges can better direct students to the proper resources, and likewise will have greater insight into how to approach these conversations with students if and when they arise.
Great. Thanks, Tiffany.
Tiffany, I think you brought up a really important piece in that for instructors. Is one thing they can do is provide hope when students are feeling hopeless. And I know in teaching FYE, I've had students, you know, maybe make comments in journal entries or papers or things that they might be struggling. And I always try to reflect on that and note that, recognize it. I've actually used counseling services and referred students to you all before. So I think that's a great reminder that as instructors, we can all try to provide hope for our students.
We do offer our services, again, because we are in a multimodal form service delivery model currently. We're able to offer appointments remote and in person, but we also offer outreach services. Currently, we have one counselor that goes to Woodburn. I believe it's on Wednesdays is when she's in Woodburn. And then as it stands right now, we currently have several other counselors who are what I call counseling liaisons to our other outreach sites. And so we may not be there doing counseling hours specifically at those sites. Two of our counselors work directly with the deans of those centers to really identify the unique needs of the students there, serve as a direct connection with faculty at those outreach centers, so that then if there's a particular student issue or concern, they can work with that counselor liaison or any of our other counselors to be able to help support that student based on those needs. And if it's something that is specific to that campus, then we have that counselor who's embedded in that center or that site to really help bolster that support.
That's great. So, I mean, all across our Tri-County district, yes, you all are at at every outreach center in some capacity.
Yes, I think that's really important to note because I think folks really lose that a lot of times in terms of thinking how we offer our services. Our services are for all Chemeketa students, no matter that location. We can work with the student to meet their needs, to identify what's the best modality of support, whether that be in person, remote, or anything like that. So it really is need-based.
Well, and especially since we have classes at all these different outreach locations and a lot of part-time faculty or adjuncts that may not know about these services. So that's great. Thanks for providing that overview. As an instructor and for all of our other faculty out there, when we think someone is in need of help, what really is the faculty referral process? Like, what are some referral signs that maybe we should be looking for or be aware of?
This is Blanca. I think it's important that, you know, whether it's in the classroom or in a remote setting, or if you're reading a paper or journal, to recognize some signs so that you can make an appropriate referral. Some examples are if you see, witness, or you read about, you know, students pulling away from their usual activities, whether they have a low or high energy in the classroom, or they start to feel hopeless or helpless. And you can see, you know, if they start to like being more absent, or just emailing you, letting you know, hey, I'm going to be absent, or I'm really concerned about these are things that are happening in my home. And so these are some examples and signs that you can, if you see in the classroom, that you would want to make a referral. And also, there might be some students who will directly tell you that they are having suicidal thoughts or feeling suicidal at the moment. And that's when you, you know, really want to make sure that you make that referral to the on-call counselor. Chris will tell you a little bit more about when to make that immediate referral.
Blanca, thank you so much for that overview. And I think there's a difference between our kind of general referral process. And so again, oftentimes when it's not that crisis moment or anything like that, there may be a student that a faculty is working with that they may notice some of those signs that Blanca talked about that are alarming to them, but they may not rise to the level of what we would term a crisis situation where they need to be walked over to the counselor or anything like that. But we also have those moments and times where there are those crisis situations where a student is in the classroom, you know, classroom, be it in a remote environment. And once upon a time, when we were face-to-face in the in-person environment, where a student may be having a really hard time, a really tough time, and they may have some suicidal thoughts or express those. And so we have to respond, or faculty can respond in that crisis situation in a very different way. So again, if it is an immediate concern, then we ask that if a faculty can, then walk them over, walk with that student, if possible, to the counseling center. So I know sometimes there might be that opportunity to do that. That doesn't happen every time, but that's one of the easiest, most direct, I guess, when you call handoffs, if a student is in that crisis moment, if there's that opportunity. Depending on what that student is presenting in that crisis moment, faculty can also get help from public safety if they need to make that quick connection to get assistance with also getting that student to our counseling center. Because again, our goal is to get that student over to the immediate help, especially if it's during our business hours and our on-call counselor is available and they're not currently meeting with a student who may be in crisis as well. We want to get them over there as quickly as possible. If none of those options may be available, we also have the opportunity to connect with the on-call counselor by calling our information desk number directly. And then the front desk person of the day or whoever's at that front desk can get a hold of the on-call counselor to connect either with that student or that faculty, to have them on the phone, to walk them through some quick steps of how to get connected with that counselor for the day so that we can stabilize. Basically, that's what we're in at that moment. We're trying to stabilize that student to make sure that they are okay, depending on what's going on for them.
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, for some faculty who really build relationships with students, you know, you're meeting, you have them for like 11 weeks, you know, building these relationships and, you know, through your office hour or in the classroom, you know, many times they will share with you a lot of their personal lives. And so if they mention something that you're concerned and you're unsure whether or not you should make a referral or how to make a referral, that's the good time for you to do a consult and just reach out to the counseling office and say, hey, this is a situation. I'm concerned. What should I do? That happens often, and which I always appreciate because that really shows that our faculty care about our students. So when in doubt, it's always good to check out, just to, you know, check in with us to see what would be the best referral process.
I'll just add in there a personal experience or a plug for this as well. Because Blanca, I think what you just mentioned is really important. And I know that you helped me several terms ago. I had a student that just said that they were struggling and they had fallen behind in their homework. So I reached out, emailed them back, told them they could make up assignments, told them about counseling services and asked them, hey, could I connect you with a counselor? And Blanca happened to be the one that I reached out to. And it was that, not a direct handoff maybe, but I was able to be that bridge as an instructor and be able to reach out to Blanca and hand off the student. And in the long run, at the end of the term, the student just said, thank you for providing that. And it was really helpful just to have someone to talk to. I think that interaction that faculty have, like you said, building that relationship with students over 11 weeks is really critical and can be that bridge in getting them to the services that you all provide.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Colin. This is Tiffany. You know, 56% of students reported they do not know where to go for help. And so I think that's true for Chemeketa students as well. They don't really know that there's a counseling office available that they can use. And so as instructors, you really get to know these students very well. You spend a lot of time with them. And just by giving them hope and letting them know that it's normal to seek help and it's okay to not be okay and that there's people on campus that are willing to help you.
Yeah, I think that's really key too, that just reminding students it's okay to not be okay when a lot of society is always telling us, you know, perfection and always do your best and, oh, hang in there and all those kinds of things. Sometimes it's really hard for students to do that. So I think that's a good reminder.
I think it's important for faculty to know that consent is important when if they're suicidal, like they don't have, you know, we don't need their consent, but when they're not suicidal, like it's important for just to get their consent, like they're going to be contacted, you know, because we always ask them, the student know we're going to contact them.
I think that's great to add on to it around that element of it, because that's one area that I think it makes the handoff from, mm-hmm. you know, faculty, student to counselor that much easier. If the counselors know that one, has the student been notified that you're going to be, you know, that you've referred them to a counselor, is it okay with them that a counselor reaches out to them? I think that's really important if faculty can get that information. I know that, so just from, and this will lead into the student concern reporting form. I know that oftentimes when I see reports from faculty, you know, we have sections on that form that asks, have they done those steps right there? And sometimes it's just not all possible. I think it helps with the handoff, but it's not absolutely necessary. I think it just changes the approach that counselor may have as they may be reaching out to that student that has been identified as a concern by a faculty member who has referred their student to counseling. To shift gears to talk a little bit more about that student concern reporting form, that's available for faculty to utilize, staff to utilize, anyone who has a concern about a student at the college. That's one of the other ways that we can kind of just stay on top of those things. Because again, there's a lot of faculty, you mentioned, Colin, there's a lot of adjunct part-time faculty who may not be here all the time. There's a lot of folks who see a lot of different things. And so our student concern reporting form comes out of the Dean of Students Office, Vice President of Student Affairs Office. And that form is monitored by Stacy Wells, who serves with the Dean of Students and the Vice President of Student Affairs. And then any reports that come through that form, they are monitored and then they're filtered out to the different offices so that they can respond accordingly. And so faculty have the opportunity to fill that form out, especially in a non-crisis situation, or if they want to make sure that someone at the college is aware of what is going on and can reach out to a student or know about a situation that has happened. That is a primary way that, again, at least I see things because I don't have direct faculty consultations, but that's the way that I can get information or follow up that may need to happen by the counselor and on-call counselor is through that student concern reporting form. So it's really important for faculty to fill out that form because, one, it allows not only for the college to be able to document that a situation has occurred and that there's follow-up that is happening in regards to that situation, but then also for me, myself, as the associate dean of the department, it allows me to manage the workflow and the assignment of the follow-up based on the situation because we have counselors who they may be on call, they may not be on duty on a particular day, or they may be working that day. But then there's also situational assessment that we may need to do because a situation may be better suited for a particular counselor to address. And so it really is helpful if faculty fill that out, even if it's post-situation. It's really helpful for also documentation purposes as well. Faculty can find that form in Mashemekara under the faculty tab. I recommend that you favorite that if you can. I know for me personally, it's embedded in my email just so that I have an easy way to find it or send it to people as well.
That's a great reminder, Chris, about making that a favorite and having all faculty know where that form is. What if a student doesn't want to see a college counselor in your program or your department? What other resources are available for students?
Talk about that. This is Karen. That happens every once in a while, and our services are free, but students also have the option of going to the student resources on the public website and looking at the mental health tab there. That's under students and then student services and then the mental health tab. There's lots of good resources listed there. There's a free mental health clinic that they could access. They could look at the Psychology Today Find a Therapist website to find a therapist that takes their particular insurance. So there's lots of referrals, or they could come and see us and we could refer them to a community resource instead of doing counseling with them.
This has been a great overview of kind of the process, the things to look out for, you know, signs in our classroom. Maybe things we notice in our students or hear from our students, or if our students come directly to us, how we can refer them to the counseling services available. I'm wondering if someone can speak to kind of the student profile over the last few months, maybe, or in our case, maybe the last couple of years. What have our students been experiencing when they're coming to the counseling center?
This is Chris. I'll give you from the data that we collect within counseling services. The highest reported, I guess, concerns or things that students are coming in to see a counselor are they mirror the national trends. And so our students are coming in to talk about anxiety, stress, and depression. That's from what we see particularly in our counseling services center or what students are reporting that they're coming in for.
I'm also curious, do you see those concerns shifting at all over periods of time, or is that a kind of always the most common, or do you have others that kind of come and go?
Well, there is one interesting thing that happened about 10 years ago. Depression used to be always the number one thing that students sought help for. And about 10 years ago, that flipped, and now anxiety is actually the most prevalent problem that students present with. So I think there's a lot of people wondering why that is. But certainly with COVID, I think the anxiety of getting sick or having your family get sick, the anxiety of some of the things that are happening, like switching back and forth and just not being certain, have added to everyone's anxiety. So I think that's an interesting trend.
I think also suicidal thoughts. One in five students are reporting having at least some thoughts in the last 18 months. And along with that often comes cutting. And cutting can be a very secretive process that students do. So it's something that as counselors we'll often assess for. But also with COVID, we've got a lot of isolation, and 68% report experiencing in the past month. So I think that's probably typical of the population in general.
Hey, Sergio. I agree that COVID is one of the main contributors to the anxiety that we're seeing in our students lately. One thing that is has been happening over the last few years is, there's a lot of climate issues. We had the fires over the last year. We had a couple of very difficult years. Political climate is another big one that is in students' minds. So COVID in many issues that are, happening these days are definitely contributing to the students' anxiety. And in my experience, the last few years have definitely, pushed a lot of students to the brink. And we're here, we're happy. I'm just excited that we're here at the counseling department, available to offer services and that are free to the students. And we just need to have our faculty and all our partners to, spread the word and let the students know that we're available.
Eusebio, you mentioned a couple things that you think have impacted anxiety in our students, like climate-related, the fires, the winter storms, the political unrest. Do you also think that social media use by our students can also affect anxiety in them?
Yeah, I agree, Colin. Social media, it's not only affecting our students. I think it's affecting all of us. It is like a drug. And the more that we use it, the more that we feel the need to use it. And that is leading to students spending a lot of time, on their screens and oftentimes struggling between, prioritizing the schoolwork and social media. And we're seeing a lot of information lately, studies, just looking at how social media is contributing around the world to anxiety and depression issues. So that definitely is an issue that our students are dealing with. And especially nowadays, since we are offering a lot of our services, not only we at Chemeketa, but the different school districts having to adjust to the COVID surges and having to go online. And so, students are spending most of their days in front of their computers and their phones. And oftentimes, it's hard for students to focus on the things that are learning and healthy, and when their screen is right next to them and their parents are having or trying to do their jobs and not monitoring as much, and they're not sitting in the classroom where an instructor and could be helping the students.
And yeah, to really follow up on what Eusebio just shared, which I think is all important, but I also think it's important to recognize that the racial unrest that we've experienced over the last several years for our students. This is for the first time they're seeing some of this, especially our younger students. They haven't seen this type of amplified discourse or around those particular topics or areas. And so they very much so are bringing that with them into the classroom and showing up very anxious, very stressed out about that. And what does that look like? That's something that has been, I would say, and maybe the counselors will agree that students have been bringing with them to those counseling sessions if they're talking about anxiety and stress, especially when we were around the election time or then even earlier in the year where we were really roiling as a country from the murder of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and some of the other individuals where there was just so much going on. on the background, on the backdrop of COVID and all the many things. So a lot of elements that the students were bringing in and dealing with at that time.
Thanks for sharing that, Chris. I think that all of this is so impactful to causes of student anxiety, and it's good for all of us as instructors to be aware of that and how it's affecting our students, but maybe even address it in our classes so that we can talk about it and provide a safe space for our students to maybe be able to deal with this as well.
Thanks, Chris and Eusebio. I think, you know, you really described what our students and all of us really have been experiencing over the last couple of years that certainly can result in increased anxiety and certainly other concerns. And I wanted to just for a moment call back to what was said earlier, that counseling services can provide students with hope when they're feeling hopeless. And I wanted to see if you had any ideas of things that instructors might be able to do in their own classrooms to support students' mental health and kind of work alongside counseling services to get students moving in that more positive direction.
This is Cleo. I think having however mode of teaching the instructor is using, I believe, if there are a welcoming and a friendly environment that always sets students on a more positive note, having a supportive environment. And I think in emphasizing maybe either on their syllabus or in conversation with their class, that the counseling department is here to help them and maybe to show them how to set up an appointment, where to go, how to do that. That might be important maybe to some students, and maybe that's all they needed and the push that they needed to see, I can do this. I didn't know we even had a counseling department. So if an instructor would talk about that, that would be great. And sometimes having flexibility and listening to the student as to why they missed a class or why they missed a week. A lot of the students I've had that have been very anxious has been because they had COVID or their family member had COVID and they had to care for that person or for themselves and could not access the remote learning. And when they have instructors that are willing to, you know, be flexible and bend the deadlines, makes them feel like, you know, they have a chance of passing the course, as opposed to someone who will say, no, I can't, you know, I will not accept any late and you've missed too much of discussion and you need to drop the class. I think a lot more understanding during this time is very important.
This is Tiffany. I'd just like to add that hope is such a small thing to give. It kind of feels like a big thing to give. It's kind of awkward a little bit, but it really is a small thing to give that has a really big impact. And so when students are feeling hopeless, they really don't see any other way out. And so for an instructor to just simply say, hey, I notice you've been feeling down lately, or I notice you didn't get your last assignment in, you know, how you doing? And that itself is just a great opportunity to offer just a little bit of hope. And then a conversation will start. And then hopefully the teacher can get the student into the counseling center.
Those are some great ideas and resources, Cleo and Tiffany, and thanks for sharing those. And I think, Cleo, it's really important for all of us as faculty to remember that piece about being flexible. And it's easy to kind of overlook or forget maybe why students are missing class, especially now in COVID, where students, like you said, may be caring for family members or may be out themselves. But it's easy just to overlook maybe why they're gone, and that flexibility and listening and reaching out to students, I think, is a great reminder.
So it's hard. It's a dilemma. It's what I'm saying. It's just, we just need to be more, I'm not saying pass everyone. I'm just saying, let's be kinder. Let's listen more. Let's find out what's going on, because there's always a story behind the reasoning.
So can someone describe for us what that student experience and what the process might be like for them as they go through counseling at the college and with you all?
Sure, I can take that. This is Karen. So typically, if a student is referred by a faculty member or a student reaches out to us and says they would like to meet with a counselor, we would help them by setting up a counseling appointment. I often do that if they're referred by a faculty member. If they email me and I'll set up the appointment. The first appointment, often those right now are remote, and so through Zoom. The day of the Zoom appointment, I'll send them an intake form, and it's called an informed consent form that they need to read and return to me with some information on it during our first session. The first session is usually just getting to know the student, and then we will identify the kinds of help and support that they need, and then we'll work towards supporting that student in whatever way makes sense. So that would be the process for mental health or personal counseling. For career or crisis counseling, it may be a little bit different. Crisis counseling, often the faculty are just walking a student over, doing a warm handoff to our office. And so there's always a counselor available during office hours, which are 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. And we would just take that student immediately and do kind of the same process with them. If it's career development or career counseling, then often they're just making an appointment. There's no intake necessarily that we send to them, but we will be doing an intake with them when they meet with us about their decision-making strategies and what they've tried so far, and helping them create a plan to become more decided and to define their academic plan.
That's great. Thanks, Karen.
I think that the student resources page that Karen referred to earlier does provide comprehensive resources to students. And so you can get to that tab by going to the Chemeketa homepage. If you click the student tab at the top and then scroll, and you'll see student resources, you will see a host of student resources. We can also provide some links so that individuals listening to this podcast will be able to access that if possible.
We've been talking a lot about instructors helping students and guiding them to counseling services. What about instructors? Do any of you have some insight as to what instructors can do for their own mental health and self-care?
I think it's important to just encourage instructors to attune to their own personal needs. So whether that is a day off, you know, just your own self-care needs. And really, when you're non-duty, you're non-duty. And that's what it is. You're not working that day, and take time to take care of yourself. So that's my very general, as a supervisor, what can be done for faculty to attune to their own mental health care. But then also, we do have our employee EAP program, which instructors have access to. That's really phenomenal, because everyone now has access to a number of sessions where they can work with a mental health professional if it is something that they, if that's one of the areas that they are looking to address. Faculty are not alone, although it may feel that way when you're that one individual in the classroom and there's however many students and these things are going on. That's not the case. Counselors can be a partner in helping take care of students. We're all in this together. We all play a role in the care, support, retention of our students. And so I think it's important to emphasize that reaching out, those faculty consultations. Many of our faculty, many of the counselors have longstanding relationships with faculty who teach full-time. And so oftentimes they do reach out to those direct contacts to really work hand in hand when they're working through a variety of student situations that they may need help with, and doing that. So if a faculty doesn't necessarily want to use their EAP, or they want to look for a provider that's in the community, Plugging Psychology to Get Today that has the option for individuals to research and put some criteria or filter around the type of counselor that they may be looking or seeking to help support them in their journey as well.
Yeah, that's great. Those are excellent resources and direction to point faculty in. So I just want to thank all of you for the insights you've shared, all of the resources, and kind of a glimpse into the great work you're doing on campus and remotely for our students. Chris, Karen, Blanca, Tiffany, Cleo, Eusebio, thank you for joining us today. Is there anything else anyone would like to share, kind of a last parting thoughts for our listeners?
To answer your last question, one, we thank you both, Colin and Bill, for just taking a slice out of their day to talk to us about such an important topic. And it's really amazing to work with other faculty at the college who recognize the importance and the value of our department and how we can serve as partners to help support our students and also one another, because we're in challenging times right now. And so I think it's important to understand the resources so that we can get our students referred to the right places. Speaking of that referral, again, if faculty want to help students make an appointment or they just want to know how to make an appointment with our services, they can talk to a student and tell them that they are able to schedule an appointment through their My Shemekada account. You just go into My Shemekada, you click on the services tab, and then click on counseling. And then finally, you click book counseling services. And that'll take you to our appointment scheduling system where a student who can take ownership of their own time and availability can see the available times that a counselor is available to meet with them for appointments ranging from 30 minutes to an hour and Monday through Friday.
Thanks, Chris. And thanks again to everyone in counseling services for joining us today on Hub Talk. And stay tuned for our next episode.
Hub Talk is produced by the Center for Academic Innovation at Shemekada Community College. Visit our website, facultyhub.shemekada.edu, to find helpful resources about teaching, learning, and technology integration, along with video tutorials and more podcast episodes just like this one.